Next up is Robert Chen from Columbia.
What I want to talk about was really the role of things like evidence-based decision-making and the need for data, not just for scientists. Most of us, I think, come from a science community where we think, you know, we understand that data is really essential to almost any scientific work. But out in the broader world, I think there's a increasing realization that data is really critical to decision-making. It's critical to the overall sustainability of the planet. So how many people have heard of the Sustainable Development Goals, the UN? Okay, good. Okay. So as many of you know, in 2015, all the nations of the world, actually, don't tell Trump, agreed on a set of ambitious goals to achieve by 2030, which didn't just cover poverty and some of the traditional foci of development, but also climate change and sustainable cities and a whole range of things. And they did it in a very integrated way, such that there are these 17 very broad, very ambitious goals. And one of the most important part about it is I said, you know, to achieve these, we actually need data. We need quantitative targets. We need outcome-based metrics. We need statistics that governments can trust. And they worked with a whole data community that maybe some of you know about, some don't, which consists largely of national statisticians, statistical offices, intergovernmental agencies, and a whole development data community who, you know, sort of said, yeah, this is good. If you're going to spend trillions of dollars like a business would on development, shouldn't you spend money on the data and the monitoring and the metrics to not only know if you've achieved what you wanted to achieve, but also make it more efficient and make those investments actually do what you think they're going to do, not just throw them into the world and expect it to do good. How do we use data to improve development and facilitate it? And as part of the mandate, the UN did, you know, I think look ahead and say we should be thinking about not just the national level. How do we disaggregate the data? How do we go below the national level? How do we look at disadvantaged groups? How do we leave no one behind and incorporate this not into just, you know, annual reports on metrics by the Secretary General, but make this part of national decision making? Again, very ambitious, and we can certainly argue about whether this is going to happen by 2030, which is the result. But there is a large community that's actually focused on these issues and how to look at what was traditionally national government reports of data just, you know, at the national level. So countries with 10,000 people were considered the same as China with a billion people. How do we drill down? They at the time, they actually also said, you know, there is this data revolution going on. We should think about how to harness it. I was part of a group of 25 people commissioned by the UN Secretary General. Sandy Pentland from MIT, some of you probably know, was on it. There were really only out of 25, a couple academics and like a couple of geospatially aware people like myself. But oddly, this produced a report, was actually only done in a couple months, that's had traction over the last 4 years since it was done. And it was this idea that, data is actually useful. It needs to be open. It needs to be transparent. There's stuff coming out of private industry that governments would never have looked at before that we need to pull into this thinking and become more efficient, become more innovative in how we address these ambitious goals. And then, so that's kind of the context. I could go on about it. The area where I've gotten involved is as you look across the goals and you think about disaggregation, obviously people are the key, right? It's not just where the fire is, it's where are the fires relative to the people and the structures, the settlements. It's not just, you know, the health, the air pollution, it's all population-driven settlements. It's not just the settlement that's there today and whether people are there, it's what's that interaction between over time, decadal scale down to, you know, tomorrow, what are the drivers of that change and why is the infrastructure there and how fragile is it or how resilient is it? Those are all socially determined, social and economically determined factors. So how do we think about all these goals in an integrated way with the same people? And of course, many of us come from disciplines where if you're a hydrologist, you thought about statistics and data in one way, and it was different actually from the earthquake, the seismologist, and it's different from any other social scientist. And so the scientists don't talk the same type of statistics. It gets really confusing if you're a decision maker trying to decide whether the most important issue is earthquake risk or flood risk or agricultural development or whatever. And you've got everybody telling you something different about the risks and the benefits using different terminology. So how do you put all these things together, talking about the same people, get rid of those disciplinary silos in a way that makes sense? So just a little history. Mike already mentioned Waldo Tobler, his colleague, who unfortunately passed away in February. But he helped think about the idea of how do you go from national population data to global population map, the first version of gridded population of the world. Now the fourth version, we now have grids of people by age and gender. But more importantly, there's lots of these data sets out there you may have run across. They use different types of remote sensing data that we've heard, radar, Landsat, high resolution remote sensing, and so forth, to better map settlements, actually in some cases start to look at the characteristics of the settlements and infrastructure in conjunction with population. And that becomes important. For example, Facebook came to my center a couple of years ago. They were really interested in rural areas, and most of the people doing the mapping had been focusing just on urban areas because that's where most of the people are. Facebook was interested in how do you reach those people who don't have internet in rural areas, and when they looked at the existing data sets, they saw how bad they were. And they decided, this has nothing to do with social media data, they did use the facial recognition algorithms that they use for photos and stuff to apply to digital globe half-meter imagery to better map structures in rural areas. And, you know, it's not the only group doing it, but they could bring to bear the kind of computational power that would take me and 5 years and 10% chance of success with NSF to get. They could just borrow on the spare time of the Facebook AI. I mean, they literally would take over data centers and run this stuff. And they're working with the International Red Cross on using these data for disaster for humanitarian applications. And you can get the data for free on our site for these kinds of sustainable development applications. So somebody mentioned having a hammer and always looking for problems. To me, we've been kind of locked in. If you were a remote sensing Landsat person, you just think that's the best thing. Use it for everything, right? But we actually are going from a data poor to a really data-rich environment where we have all these different measures, sensors that have pros and cons. You know, radar works where it's cloudy, whereas a lot of these optical sensors, of course, are limited by clouds or by other confounding factors. We have internet connectivity, we have cell phone traffic, we have all sorts of other sources that are given, could potentially give us a much more rich, multidimensional view of what is the basic issue, which is where do people live, what are their structures, how are they maintaining them? How are these evolving over time and space? and can we put this together using these pictures? So we have been developing a collective, what I call a data collaborative called PopGrid. We have lots of partners, Google Earth and Facebook. Esri has been very active in it. So the private sector, groups around the world, a couple of international organizations, the several of the data groups that have come up out of the sustainable development community. One thing we've been trying to do is get the stakeholders to think about what are their needs and what could this community provide better that meets needs, but that cut across the silos. And how can we better provide that kind of information, you know, interpret, you know, take scientific review papers and make it into understandable information for these kinds of users so they can make better choices about the population settlement data that they can use, whether it's for long-term planning or practical applications, you know, figure out where the people are in a wildfire situation or whatever. So, you know, if anybody's interested in participating, we encourage you. I left a souvenir for all of you who stuck it out this afternoon. This is a very useful microfiber cloth and has our population data set on it. So take that away with you and come visit our site. Thank you.